Good evening, everyone. Lovely to be here with all of you on day 722 of coming and going, Sashin. I wanted to talk a little bit about this necessity of great doubt. This is taken from a book called Great Doubt, and this particular little bit is taken from some writings by Chinese teacher Bo Shan, and the piece is called Exhortations for Those Who Don't Raise Doubt. So I am not such a person, actually, who has not raised doubt. This is something of a natural state for me. So I've tried to make some use of this natural tendency to be in doubt. So this great doubt is sometimes taken to be a particular sort of thing that some Zen schools prize quite highly, particularly the Linji or Rinzai schools of Zen, and particularly I think of Hakuin. I've read several quotes from Hakuin about how you must raise this great doubt, this doubt block, it's often called, and that our Zen practice is to build up this great wall of doubt and then go smashing through. And I think, so this is the same thing that Master Mumon is talking about in his commentary in the first case in the Gateless Barrier collection, Jiaozhou's dog. He talks about raising this great doubt and describes it as a red hot iron ball that is swallowed down and gets stuck, and that there's no way to cough it up or swallow it down. And I have certainly had some periods in my Zen career where I felt quite a bit like this, like I had this red hot ball stuck in my throat. But, so this is not actually the thing that I want to talk about. In Bang De Sui, it's not that we don't recognize this as a true Zen way, but we don't put particular emphasis on this as being the one true way of Zen. I think there's actually many true ways of Zen involving all sorts of different mixtures of great doubt and great entrusting. These three pillars of Zen, great doubt, great faith, and great determination. I think some combination of those things powers all of us here, I imagine. Certainly, we have no shortage of determination if we're sitting here, you know, for hours on end. We all seem to have a plentiful supply of this necessary determination. But I think each individual probably has their own mix of doubt and faith And for many years, I thought that I was a person with absolutely no faith whatsoever, and that this was my big problem. Was I would say, well, I have no trouble rousing plenty of doubt, but I can't seem to get a handle on this third pillar here, this faith thing, and it was actually quite an important thing for me because as an alcoholic and an alcoholic who has been for many, many years involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of one of the main tenets of AA is finding faith that can be helpful in dealing with our addiction. And I never was actually able to find the sort of faith that most of my friends seem to be able to muster, at least the ones who were successful. So I went off in search of some other sort of spiritual path that would be useful to me, that did not require me to have some level of great faith that I didn't seem to be able to muster. And upon finding Zen, there seemed to be this wonderful allowance for the sort of doubt that I naturally have. No simple answers here. And very often, this holding of two very contrary principles that somehow, in some not terribly understandable way, both sides are simultaneously true, even though they seem to be diametrically opposed. And plus, the teachers that I encountered were very clear that they weren't asking me to believe in any of the things that they were talking about. Zen is very clear that we need to find out for ourselves. And I think, you know, what is true for each of us as individuals is probably somewhat different than others. That I don't think there is necessarily one true practice for all of us. So for me, it has always seemed like in my Zen practice, I needed to try and find some balance to my practice. So there's this silent sitting, this not moving, being quiet, that I find does allow my mind to settle somewhat, at least from time to time, my mind settles. Often it continues to be quite disturbed, but there is this settled quality that can appear particularly on long retreats like this, and I really value that settling in. But I think, Master Boshan here in this piece is warning us that this is not enough, at least in his view. I'm not sure it's the only view, but it's the view that he's expressing here, that there's another side. And it's a side that really appeals to me with all of my doubt, right? Is that perhaps I can make some use of this doubt. And I think this is very much what we do here in Boundless Way with our koan practice, right? It's a practice of inquiry. And this is something that that I recall discussing at length with David Roshi's teacher, George Bowman. We talked quite a bit about the necessity of trying to find, for me, a balance between this practice of just sitting and allowing the mind to settle, and this inquiry practice, using my doubt in order to keep my practice alive and fresh. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a practice that sort of developed for me out of necessity. My teacher at the time had asked me to stop working on our koan curriculum because he felt like, although I was answering koans, they weren't having quite the impact on me that he would like. And this was quite a difficult thing for me. And I felt the need to find some other way of keeping this inquiry practice alive. And so I took up a practice of going through our liturgy book and looking at various pieces and wondering, you know, what is being talked about here? There's a lot of places where it's not very clear to me. And then picking out little bits that attracted me and kind of sitting with them as koan. So one of these koans that I still find great value in sitting with comes from the Heart Sutra, which is quite a fundamental piece in Zen, and it talks about there being no suffering. And somehow that always seems to kind of get stuck with me. And I fall into these states where this just makes no sense to me. You know, looking at my painful mind and the world around me that's on fire, can there really be no suffering? Are we talking about that maybe I can do a thing with my mind that I won't feel any suffering anymore? In spite of the world being the way that it is? And would this even be a useful thing? But, and this is where I think the faith comes in for me is I have a sense of that there is something, right? That there is this other way of holding life and the universe and everything, that where no suffering is actually true somehow. And so, you know, I sit in the middle of my painful mind states and just allow the suffering to wash over me. And in this inquiry into suffering, it's not like, you know, I'm asking myself questions or, coming up with neat answers or anything like that. It's just sitting with this, no suffering, really? What is this about? And for me, I find this quite helpful somehow. And it's not clear to me exactly how, but I notice a certain shift. And there is something. This practice of the bodhisattva of compassion. I'm sitting downtown in the middle of suffering and not being destroyed by the suffering. Hearing the cries of the world and doing her best to respond. And somehow being able to see both sides of this at the same time. Both the great suffering of the world and also the great no suffering of the universe. And even though as a mere mortal, it is not, it seems possible for me to hold both sides of this in my little mind for long, I can see sometimes the one side and sometimes the other. And that seems to me to be of quite a bit of value. So I just wanted to share with you this little inquiry practice of mine. Thank you.